AgriFutures Australia acknowledges the First Nations people of Australia as the traditional custodians of the lands and waters on which we live, learn and work. We pay our respects to past, present and future elders of these nations. Our head office is located in the lands of the Wiradjuri people of Australia, and we acknowledge them as the traditional custodians of the lands and waters of the region.
This is AgriFutures On Air, brought to you by AgriFutures Australia, driving innovation in Australian agriculture.
Hello, this is AgriFutures On Air, and I'm Jane Cudahy. The annual AgriFutures Australia Rural Women's Award acknowledges the significant achievements of women from rural communities and industries by identifying, empowering and celebrating their forward-thinking initiatives. The winner of the Tasmanian Award is Melissa Dunham. Melissa is impressive, not just because of her tenacity of spirit when it comes to adversity, but her willingness to help others achieve their goals. Melissa offers a unique interactive developmental learning experience through her business Leading Rein, where she quite literally gets participants to take the reins, not only of the horses they find themselves face to face with, but with their own destiny. Westpac is a platinum sponsor of the award, and thanks to their generosity, Melissa has received a $15,000 grant to continue to build her business. It also means that she'll have access to professional development opportunities and alumni networks that so many of her AgriFutures Rural Women's Award peers have relished over the years. Melissa prides herself on providing an authentic program that she's honed over the years while facing her own hurdles. Melissa, where in Tasmania do you call home?
I'm located on the far northwest coast of Tasmania, so Lutruwita, and we are in a tiny little township called Millabina, which has 80 people tops.
That sounds like a beautiful part of the world. Tell me a little bit more about Millabina and your farm there and what you do on the farm, but yeah, just tell me a little bit about it.
So Millabina is quite new to us. We moved here October last year. So we are dairy farmers and we have lived on a third generation, my husband's family farm, literally over the hill. And we shifted here October last year when I came to the conclusion that we needed to have our own space and shift off from the farm environment. We'd been in that house for 20 years and our whole farming structure had changed from when my husband and I first initially started together. So we've grown our business continually through a growth phase for the last 20 years in partnership, and the business is now sitting in a company structure. So in 2016 is when I had a serious farm accident, and my usual duties on that particular farm became restricted and limited. So I've been making adjustments to the sales over the last 6 years, which has led us to this little township of Millabina now.
But you're still involved in farming, but the role has changed. Is that right? If it's gone to corporate?
I've stepped out of the duties. My husband is still actively involved. We're shareholders and investors. So he is operations manager across the five farms. And this particular farm at Millabina is owned solely by us. So we have a few parcels of land that aren't incorporated into the company structure. So we run some crossbred cattle and have my few horses. And we have three daughters too that we're raising.
Oh, good. That sounds like you've got plenty to do there. And I do, Melissa, want to talk a little bit about your horses, of course, because that's why we are talking to you as the AgriFutures finalist for Tasmania for the Rural Women's Award. Tell me about the horses and the service that you're offering with them.
So in October last year, it was a very busy month. I went on and did my facilitation training for equine assisted learning. And my focus was on human development, basically through a business structure, whether that leadership or team development. And so I had this vision basically based on our last 20 years of growing our own business and some of the challenges that we identified through the process of building quality teams. So my business is Leading Rein, and that provides a series of unique workshops and programs which are designed around that human development to strengthen those relationships. And the unique factor, obviously, is participants partner with my horses. And we explore the similarities between horse and human behaviours, which they're quite parallel.
So there's a lot to unpack here. I want to start with how you first made that correlation, because as you said, you know, you had your accident back in 2016. That obviously took a big toll on you and getting back to being able to work and I guess function again. So did the horses play a role in that recovery, or is this something that you found separately?
Yeah, they did play a massive role in my recovery, but it winds right back to my childhood, which is something that I've really only connected over the last 5 or 6 years. My pop, he was a dairy farmer himself, and he was a late starter getting into horses, very much like me. But as a kid, I always remember at Pop's place, I'd watch him in the round yard. I was just fascinated. He had this kind and clear approach whenever he was working with the horses. And I guess at the time, I didn't realise, but that is probably what instilled that essence and maybe set that benchmark of what exceptional leadership was for me.
And why is that? Like, what was he doing that made you think that?
It was not a forced conversation. The dynamics worked where he was asking questions really to the horses. He wasn't forcing or demanding his own expectations on them. So I always notice how engaged the horses were with him, and it wasn't a fear-based.
And would he use verbal cues too, or was this all non-verbal?
This was verbal. I still talk to my horses. I'm always having conversations with them, but it's not necessarily through the verbal cues. It was through body language and his attunement and connection back into these animals, which are very sentient beings. Any animal is, but because horses are so social and they want to connect as well, they're very curious. So yeah, it kind of started all those years ago, and I was very, very young, but I still remember watching Pop in that round yard and just being blown away that something of such substance and of what, 450 kilo animal could connect and have a really solid relationship with a human.
So what sparked it for you? Because you said, you know, you had that experience when you were younger, but it didn't really come home until the last 5 or 6 years. So what was the ignition point?
Well, I guess I kind of went through up until being that late starter with horses as well. When we purchased the third generation family farm, there was a spare paddock, so I bought the horse.
Of course, but, because, you know, why wouldn't you? That's logical. Donkeys
exactly.
Are also fun. You know, I heard, Melissa, donkeys are great.
Yes, I'd love a donkey, but I'd also not like to push the friendship with the husband as well. But
yeah, I'm in exactly the same situation.
Yeah.
Carry on.
And it is hard on farms, I guess, because a lot of everything that you do is based on measures and outcomes and profitability, and horses don't tend to, they tend to eat more, and you can't put a price on your emotional well-being. And that is kind of what we bring into this as well. And that is what they did for me through my recovery. That was back in 2016, I had a farm accident, and it was a long time to literally be sat on your butt and wonder, what is it that I can do moving forward? Like, it was really mentally challenging to know, well, people are out there feeding my calves. They're out there getting the cattle in for me. They're filling in my role when we're already. It was a pretty dark place to kind of sit for a while. And I remember at the time just being so frustrated, because people will say, oh, something amazing will come out of this. But at the time it was like, how?
Yeah, exactly.
And the more that you push something, the more restriction and bristles that tend to hop up. So I just had to let go. And it took for a friend of mine to say to me, have you heard of this stuff that people are doing with horses to help benefit humans? And I hadn't. So I kind of researched back then, obviously wrong timing, physical ailments, financial ailments, and a lot of things to consider. Our kids were still young, but the property was not ideal for that as well, being in a heavy working dairy farm. There was a lot going on, but it always stuck with me because it just resonated and it fit with me and my personality and the kind of relationship that I'm trying and build with the horses as well. It just kind of evolved as we took on this place at Millabina. It has a massive derelict indoor equestrian centre.
Wow.
Yeah, it's not something that's very common on the northwest, but we took over ownership last year. And initially I was just not interested, but as we cleaned up this place and the property, the more I kind of looked at it and thought, this is a possibility. It's still sitting there in me.
What specifically did they help you with? Like, was it their calming presence, or was it they teach you to just be a bit calmer with yourself and give yourself a break.
Yeah, and that's so funny that you say that, give yourself a break, because that's what I said that day of my accident. I said, I just need a break. And so at that time, you know, like, you can be a skeptic, but I remember saying those words and it never left me. And for me to get out of the house and get out of my head and go back outside was a huge deal, physically, for family to wheelchair me out to just spend some time with the horses. I'm in the most vulnerable position ever with the leg elevated.
Would you mind just explaining what the injuries were? So if you were in a wheelchair, I'm assuming it's hips and legs that you were injured with?
So I had a crush, compound crush. I was trapped under the buggy for 3 hours, or while I was waiting for ambulance and services for 3 hours. So compound tib and fib, so both lower bones, which involved a rod and metalware put in once I had surgery, but it just went on for infections. I ended up with some really serious infections and nearly lost my limb. So that took quite some time. So yes, I was laid up for at least a good 18, nearly 2 years, and ongoing surgeries from that. At the time, I didn't realise. I just thought that I'd broken my leg and would get over this. But the journey was quite huge.
Massive. You were relying on people. Now it sort of makes sense, I guess, how much you were relying on people around you. So when you got outside and, you know, people did take you outside, what happened?
So that, even that in itself, to ask people for what I needed was huge. And I knew I needed to see my horses. I needed to see the animals. I needed to see the dogs. And but outside with the horses, they were so gentle. And they picked exactly where my pain points were. They picked what had happened. They will scan you and assess you. And it was very emotional at the time, because the skeptic inside you was like, oh, yeah, that just happened. That was just something. It was coincidence. But the vibe doesn't lie. And that's what I've learned over that time, is that what we can say and what we can feel can be two different things, and the horse will pick that up.
When you said that they can pick those pain points, was it, you know, a matter of them nuzzling you where it was hurting, or did they just,
Yep, physically scanned me to the point of where the compound was and just held and sniffed and blew in that area.
They knew they could feel it.
Yeah, they can feel it. So they can feel the difference in your body.
This is very physical for you, and I can imagine that the rest of the recovery went along those lines. So then, you know, I realise I'm skipping forward here, but then when you are relating it to personal and professional development, I'm imagining some of these, you know, leaders aren't coming to you with physical ailments. How does it translate to those leadership qualities?
Yeah, so they don't have physical ailments, but they have what we call, I don't believe it's a common word, but it's incongruence. When we say one thing and feel another, so we're not aligned in our body. And a horse can easily pick up on that, because they're looking for safety. So they're looking to make sure that everything's okay. And when we talk about that in leadership, we can bring leaders into the arena, and they can be with a team or they can be with people who are used to them leading. But when you're in an environment where you pull off the name tag, you pull off the leadership role, we're all there equally and universally with the horse as a team. If a horse is not feeling safe enough to be led by somebody, they'll make it known. So everything is just, the veil is pulled off. You're there in your raw honesty and your vulnerability. And that's exactly how I felt when I was wheeled out to the horses.
Can you talk about the experience of that and the effect that it had on you, keeping in mind that it obviously pushed you to do something marvellous with it? Mm. You said it was a very emotional time when you went out for that first time, but what made you want to keep going back and healing with them?
I guess that with them and that time, it's very hard to explain a connection that you can develop with a horse if you've never been around horses. It sounds very childlike and it sounds very fluffy, but on the same side to that, does it matter that it actually is? Because that's really important. That's important for us to have those feelings or emotional content, really, to be deep human beings. And for me, I was seen in a space when I was feeling a real lack of value, that I still bought such a sense of value, even in that whole vulnerability. I didn't have all the answers and I wasn't the expert, but I know that I was going through a process. And sometimes I feel what I've seen through our 20 years in business is that was exactly the space that I was creating for a lot of our managers and teams. It was not necessarily to dictate or demand that we had these expectations, but to actually create a space to hold those conversations of vulnerability And so I guess I kind of paralleled and connected things back and saw the value that that brought as well. Wasn't necessarily from an expert point of view or somebody that I am brilliant with numbers, but I was definitely great at connecting and allowing people to hold these conversations that they necessarily wouldn't hold. The horses have probably taught that too.
Yeah, for sure. When you've processed and healed, when did it become an opportunity to go further afield and bring outside people in to experience what you did?
Again, Milabina, it's so new. This is so fresh and new to me. I literally hit the ground running in October. It's just everything aligned at once and we've gone full force running ahead. From doing my facilitator training, the minute that I'd done that, I thought, right, well, we need to run pilot programs. We need to get me as a facilitator fluent in offering this delivery and working out my specialized role through this process and what additionally I can bring to this. And so I connected with a lot of people in our community and network and just brought forward, I think we ran over a dozen pilot program sessions. And I would pull organizations or small teams or women leaders and just bring them out with the horses and just start practicing the process.
Tell me some of the breakthrough moments you've had with people that have been surprised at what's come out during those sessions.
My most favorite and most common theme that happens is people in teams that don't necessarily have the strong verbal communication will still come out as the strongest leaders and trusted team members within the group. Participants and the horses will give us that feedback.
Explain how that works in a group situation. Like, what have you got set up? How many horses have you got out? How do you demonstrate that in a team?
Yeah, so in a group situation for these programs, I can have up to 8 people in the arena at one time. That's with 2 horses. So 4 people per teams with the horses, 4 groups at that one particular time. So that's from a safety perspective, obviously. So we'll run through some particular objectives or pain points that the businesses are having or the teams or groups are having, and we will base our format on that particular objective.
And is this mainly around communication, like communication within groups? What other problems are they coming with?
There's heaps of different things. So we can look at communication is the biggest thing that we're looking at. We're looking at leadership tendencies. We're looking at personalities. Mm-hmm. We can work through conflict of interest, navigating those challenging conversations as well, people finding their voice. It's basically life skills and leadership in the arena. And they're skills that we can kind of take back into the workplace, but we can also build better humans.
Tell me about the arena. You've got teams of 4 with a horse each?
Yeah, so a horse each. And like I said, depending on the objective of that particular team at the time. So one of the biggest takeaways is you normally have, well, I say normally, what I have seen as a common theme is a little bit of ego.
So, no, not in these kind of businesses. That's incredible. Yeah.
So you'll tend to see the people that have the strongest voice step up first and feel that that is what needs to fill that void of uncertainty. So they'll take the lead, but it doesn't necessarily mean everybody in their team is feeling on board or safe or understanding or, you know, they haven't got the knowledge yet or the uncertainty in us. The attribute we have is the horse, non-horse people handling horses. So for us, you kind of see that happen. There's obstacles that are set up in the arena. There's certain particular activities and there'll be a little bit of a cryptic activity that they've got to work through together. So there's the team development side. But what happens is you'll have these people who are used to just taking the lead and used to just stepping in and they're kind of not actually integrating as a team. They're just taking over.
Yeah.
And the minute that that happens, we're always reminding everybody that you're there as a team. So you do need to achieve as a team. It's not about the outcome, not the destination, it's the journey.
Yeah.
But what you'll find is they get a little bit uncomfortable in that uncertainty. And so instead of just coming back to the group and assessing, finding strengths, they'll just forge forward and you can guarantee that your horse won't be on board if you have somebody that has that strong domination.
Yeah, it'll just step backwards and move away from you. And
well, they just plant their feet. They're just like, I don't trust you. You're not clear. I don't understand what you're saying. And you look back at the rest of the human team and they're doing exactly the same. They're too scared to stop this person. They're too scared to say, I don't understand what you're doing. So what that does is that creates a real teachable moment for us in that moment. And my job as a facilitator is to not get too involved, allow those people to have those conversations and learn from the horse, whether it is through the body language and what it is that it's trying to say. But we'll always be paralleling back to the objective or whatever it is that we're working on, whether it is that communication rip that particular day. Part of the process is not only actioning challenges in the arena, but we come back and we do a bit of a debrief as a team to work out individually and collective how that went and what were some of the things that we kind of learned through that process. And normally what will happen is obviously the horses will resist or they'll give them a little bit of feedback to say this is not working out for us. So that's where I would step in as a facilitator and say, hey, how's your horse doing? What's going on for us? What is it that we could potentially change in this situation? Or what's something that we're not necessarily thinking about here? Normally it will come back to that strong leadership, that forced leadership. And it's great that we can do that because with the horses, they don't take it personal. Like the humans, there's a little bit of an indirect opportunity to change. Whereas if you were in the workplace or you were at a team development where you had to role play, sometimes you can feel really uncomfortable in those spaces, especially when you are a leader of teams that are sitting there looking for you.
Yeah.
So we can create that opportunity for that change in our arena with the horse. And the best part is the horse is the encourager. Because once they make that change and adjust, which normally is, let's connect back to the team. Is there somebody here that knows what to do? Because I've got no idea. Once you let go of that voice and that verbal strength, we can all come back in and reshuffle and adjust. And what happens is normally it tends to be the quietest person comes up with the most amazing initiative that would never have been considered before because the strong voice speaks first.
Yeah. Exactly. So what's been the biggest surprise for you when you're dealing with these groups and the leaders that you've had through? What surprised you?
It's not necessarily been a surprise because I've recognised it and identified it myself in the way that I've kind of worked with connections with horses, but it's more so the really timid people who come in with the fear of being seen, the fear of being heard. They're not used to that, but the horses are attracted to them because they feel safe. They're not a threat. In a herd environment, horses are always continually scanning their stimulus, their surrounds, to make sure that they are safe because the first thing that they want to do is a fight and flight response. They just want to leave. And so when you have somebody that is not a strong dominant type and they come up with a solution and they quietly come in and interact with the horse, how the horse approaches that is very, very different to somebody that has that strong tendency.
So you are an AgriFutures Rural Women's Award State finalist. What does that mean to you and your business?
Well, being a finalist for me was such a surprise. I have literally taken the gumboots off and I've entered this realm that is so unfamiliar to me. But what it also means with the AgriFutures opportunity is the opportunities that I gain for my project with Leading Rein. And that's really to raise awareness that these services do exist and this opportunity for teams and organisations and business are available to really help hone on those skills and communication relationships in the workplace.
What's the feedback been like from the groups that you've worked with and, you know, pointed out some of their pain points and workshopped it a little bit? What's the feedback been?
Empowering. Not something that they ever considered could make such an impact, and really helping the quieter and emerging leaders show themselves that they've got some strength and qualities there to then go back into the workplace or into their environment or organisation and just show that they actually have something to contribute in that space. So it is a very empowering offering. For me, if we go back to what it means to be an AgriFuture finalist, I will continue to develop my skills and my offerings. This is a component, I believe, to what I will offer. I feel like there's some more areas that I can skill myself up to really create a really powerful package to build better people and teams in the workplace.
And for you personally, you've had your own, you know, journey and you've got some ongoing issues with that. How will the horses continue to help you in what you're doing?
For me, it's just a habitual routine to every day be reconnected back outside. I am an outdoors girl. I love nature. I need to be grounded. And the horses help do that every day.
And so what would be your message to people that are listening and thinking about maybe trying this kind of therapy or experience?
Soft skills, I guess, are such strong skills in life. there's something that we're, as adults, we're not taught so much. I guess more so in the ag industry. It's not a common place to explore, but to develop and grow these skills and do so alongside animals like the horses, it's worth exploring because you'll learn something about yourself that you didn't recognise before.
And what about the horses? Have you got the same horses in every workshop?
No. I make sure that I don't make this
a habit.
One of my biggest things. Yeah.
Yeah. The poor horses. Still, oh, God, here we go again.
Yeah. I don't want them to feel slaves to the labour.
Yeah.
They are my family, so I'm always continually making sure. I do have what I call the dream team. So I have three horses that are the trio, and they are just such a great team together. Their relationship is just amazing. So even if I haven't pulled two, if I've got two in, I'll still bring another one in. We have a lot of indoor stables around the facility as well. And so there's always a horse there watching or supporting or looking for a pat or and there's always a way to engage and connect with them.
Oh, that's awesome. I love that. And I guess it gives you an excuse to keep getting more horses if you started with one. I just feel like this has given you some great opportunities here, Melissa.
The donkeys could be next.
Oh, see? Donkeys. And they need pairs.
Yeah, so they do.
So this is a whole new era for you. It's okay. I won't charge you a commission for that fabulous idea. Melissa, it's been an absolute pleasure to speak to you today, and all the best in the next round of the AgriFutures Rural Women's Award. It's going to be great fun, no doubt, in Canberra doing all of your workshops and things that are coming up.
Thanks, Jay.
All the best.
Thank you.
That was Melissa Dunham, the Tasmanian finalist for the AgriFutures Australia Rural Women's Award. Tickets for the September 12 gala dinner are on sale now. Visit agrifutures.com.au for more information. Over the coming weeks, you'll hear from all of our state and territory finalists, and there's so many more incredible stories between them. They're united in their encouragement for any regional, rural or remote women who operate an interesting or innovative business to get involved. So please watch out for the opening of online applications for the 2024 AgriFutures Rural Women's Award. They'll open on Wednesday, the 13th of September, 2023. That's the day after this year's gala dinner. Speak with you again soon. I'm Jane Cudahy.
You've been listening to AgriFutures On Air, a podcast brought to you by AgriFutures Australia. For full access to a huge backlog of stories on Australia's agricultural trends and innovations, research outcomes, inspiring stories from our rural leaders, and insights into new and emerging rural industries, please subscribe to AgriFutures On Air on your favourite podcasting app. You can also find more information at our website, agrifutures.com.au.